Hi, it's Cheyenne, and it is Wednesday, the 22nd of March. I'm here with the 1 o'clock group. So far, we have Jody and Jane and Lori. Who wants to get us started with celebrations and check-ins?
I'll go. I'm Jane. I was thinking that I'm just celebrating this whole program of the Impact ADHD Parent Success System because it's really helped a lot overall. I don't have a specific example of what I do, but it's just the program has worked really well.
You've worked it really hard too, Jane. So it's a mutual sort of thing. It works. What is that really say? It works when you work it, right? So you've done a lot of hard work on it. So I'm glad that you're getting what you need. It's awesome. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll go. This is Jody. The success we had, one of the things that I have with my oldest is, when I hear from him, it's usually bad. When he calls or texts or whatever, it's either he needs something or it might be some bad news. And last night he texted me and told me that he killed his macroeconomics test. And I was really happy to get to celebrate that with him. I feel like my daughter started to have success and it snowballed and, you know, it builds. And I'm hoping that's going to be the case with him. So that's where we're celebrating.
Well, and it feels great for him to reach out and celebrate instead of just reaching out when he needs something, it sounds like. That's awesome.
Yes, I've joked around with them about that. So go ahead and share any good news anytime you like, you know. So, yeah, it was good.
That's fabulous. Awesome. Lori, what about you?
Well, nothing jumps out as one incident, but I think overall the week or so has been pretty good. I think in a large part they have the school park tests and things, which means there's like no homework. And so many of our conflicts or discussions have always been about, okay, put down the phone and do the homework. So we haven't had a lot of opportunities for negotiations and things. So it's been pretty peaceful, but there have been a few times where I then have to remember the last call about, okay, why are things going on and staying curious and all this of why she's reacting like this or why I react. So overall, it's been a very peaceful 2 weeks. So good.
So Lori, what do you notice has been shifting when you get curious?
I think I'm just kind of think, okay, why is she reacting a certain way? And then I might ask her a few questions, or I might think, okay, it's because you didn't eat any lunch and I can tell that that you need something to eat. And so I encourage her to get something somewhat healthy, and it affects her emotions, I think, and helps her calm down. So it's just more of raising the question and pausing before I react. So it tends to be, when she pauses, I can calm myself down and say, okay, what are some possible things that we can do together to get rid of these negative emotions.
Awesome. So instead of just going off the fly, it's giving you that space you need to kind of go, okay, what do I really want to choose to do right now? What does my child need right now? I mean, all those questions that you want to be able to ask. That's great.
Right. Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. So, Jane, where do you want to take AIM today?
I was listening to the new Sanity School Module 1, and it hit me when I was doing that circle of the circle where parent impact wheel of life, and I found that I would really like to take aim on getting myself out of being a phase one parent in the parent role. So looking at all these items again, because I did the first three lessons of the older Sanity School. Is that called Evergreen now?
Well, Evergreen is just if you're not listening to it live. Evergreen is just there's a group of people that are doing it with us live right now. For the most part, the program, she's been updating them. And so if you're doing the Evergreen program, you should be getting the new recordings as well.
Yeah. So I realized I'm very dissatisfied with being, because you had to rate your satisfaction and a couple things. But then one was being, you know, as old as my son is, 16, I'm pretty much in phase one, which I think that I need to take aim on moving to phase two.
Well, and so I guess, you know, I love the construct of shifting from being more directive. And so is there a particular area? So when I challenge you to kind of narrow in a little bit and say, is there a place where you see that he would like you to be less directive, or that he wants to take more ownership, or, you know, kind of like, is there a logical place to take aim and start with and kind of really go through that exercise of handing off the baton more formally?
Schoolwork.
Okay.
And you know, on the... Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Like on the ride home from school yesterday, I was asking about this, about that, about the other. And I try not to do that because I know it shouldn't be like the only thing I talk about. And I tried to ask him, what made you laugh today, as my first question. But later on I asked, and he finally was so frustrated, but the things had to be done. He said, would you stop talking? And he put his head back and got all exasperated. So I said, Josh, what can I do to support you and help you? Because he knows, and he said to me, he does need it, that won't make you so exasperated. So he would like for me to, you know, not be there so much. And he said, well, I guess just arrange things like my tutoring, which he does get. And that's all he said.
So if you were going to ask, I'm going to let you think about this while I move on to Jody and Lori, but it's like if you were going to come up with a couple of questions that you could add in before you start directing, you know, that would kind of put it in his court. You know, even if it's something as simple as, hey, buddy, I'd love to talk to you about what's going on at school. Is there a good time today that might work for you? You know, so what are some things that you could, you know, what are some phrases that you could use or some, you know, steps that you could add in the handoff process to go from, because what the challenge is, a lot of times we go from we own it to we want them to own it 100%, and we got to figure out kind of what the steps are in between. Mm-hmm. So does that feel like a good thing for you to think about for just a few minutes as we go back around?
Ask questions of him.
Yeah, kind of. What kind of questions might you be able to ask him? Okay, cool. Jody, where do you want to take aim?
I'm probably going to need a little help with this. I buy-in is something that I've had a really hard time with Quinn, with respect to ADHD. Period. You know, at times he won't consistently take medicine, and at times he has said, oh, Mom, everybody has ADHD. I wish that he took more of an interest in it and, you know, bought into it and then owned it so that he would be the one, you know, looking up what strategies would work for him and become more independent with that instead of me. I feel like in my controlling way that, you know, I'm constantly diagnosing, constantly researching, constantly spitting out information, trying to help. And I don't know how I can get him to buy into it and own it.
So what it sounds like is that you want to take aim on helping him get buy-in for some of the challenges he's having.
Yes.
Is it about the label or is it about the challenges? Which one's important to you?
Yeah, I don't care about the label. I care about the challenges. So if he took more of an interest in what his challenges are, it would help him come up with his own solutions.
Okay, cool. So how, I guess the question is, how specific does that feel for you to say that you're going to take aim on getting buy-in, increasing his buy-in rather than getting, I'm going to say it that way because I think that it's a step. So it's like increasing his buy-in for some of the challenges he's having because of his executive function issues. Does that feel right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Is there any particular area of challenge that kind of pops out for you that you think that might be a place to start?
Yeah, I'm thinking that, and I don't have that. Well, I've got it somewhere. But when we went over the chart and talked about, you know, what his biggest challenges or struggles or deficiencies, whichever word you want to use, he did identify a couple. And I guess I can phrase it in such a way that, you know, finals will be coming up here in the next month, and asking him how he anticipates that, you know, those school, what he has to accomplish and what his challenges are and how he's going to prepare for that.
Well, and so I'm going to challenge you for now to just stick with the challenges, and specifically you've opened the door by saying he knows what some of his executive function challenges are and he's identified those. And so that'll be a good way for you to kind of put your foot in the door, and then let's hold off on the strategy piece specifically until we kind of talk through some of the other pieces. Does that make sense?
Great. Yep. Yep.
Okay.
Great.
Cool. Lori, what about you?
I think I want to take aim at, I guess, you know, we struggle with the homework situation and then getting things done, even after homework is done and she's watching something on her iPhone, and then it's time to get ready for bed, and, you know, there's certain routines that she has to do. And I'm trying to figure out why I can't just let it be that she gets things done, but not in my time frame. I mean, in the big picture, so she gets it done, and so maybe she's on her phone for half an hour longer than I would like her to, because, you know, it's 10 o'clock and she's still on electronics and everything you read is bad, you know. But I don't know. I think I should just relax, but I'm having problems just saying, okay, she knows all these things she has to do, but I'm just trying to maybe take aim on having a more, I don't know. I mean, agreement. I mean, quite often when she says, I said, okay, turn off the phone. She says in a few minutes. And then I kind of say, what's a few minutes? Is it 3 minutes? And then 10 minutes go by, and then I have to kind of say it again. And then eventually she turns it off. But, you know, it's kind of, it's not that big of a thing, but it seems to just be irritating me.
Well, and so it sounds like, what the change you want to see is that you want to have more, you want to allow and relax a little bit more, particularly when you notice that you're pushing your time frame on her and you have some confidence that she's going to get stuff done on her own time frame. Is there a particular area that might help you to ground a little bit more and say, you know, specifically around evenings and getting her stuff ready for bed, or, you know, or does it feel okay to just kind of leave it open?
Well, you know, I'm just concerned about that it keeps pushing, bedtime keeps getting pushed back and gets pushed back, and then it's 10:30 and she's still on electronics. I mean, you know, of all just these studies and things are saying electronics are not great for anybody to before bed, and so it'd be like, if, you know, even if it's just 10 o'clock, everything goes off, whether you sit there in bed and don't do anything before you're, you know, to brush your teeth and all that until 10:30, that's fine. But I just kind of, but even then I think, okay, why am I being this way? I mean, I don't know. So it's, I don't know.
Well, it sounds like you, so my guess is that, you know, you, in your mind, it feels like you want to put a boundary in place, but you don't officially have one. And so it's causing you some conflict because you're not sure you should have the boundary. And you don't have the buy-in for the boundary because you haven't really put the boundary in place. And so you feel like you're kind of in this middle ground where it's like you want to have the boundary, but it's not officially there, and you don't want to be hard-nosed about it. Am I getting that right?
Right, but, you know, why don't these kids do what we want them to? I mean, wouldn't that be nice? I mean, I noticed that, but it's
great. Remind me how old your daughter is?
13.
Okay, so 14. Why didn't she do what you want her to do?
No, and so it's like, in this case right now, as I said, things have been pretty good. So I'm, you know, this is hardly a thing to be complaining about when looking through the years and what I anticipate in the future,
well,
much bigger
issue. It's so hard, Lori, because they get to that age where, I mean, for the longest time, they did stuff because we told them to do it. And they wanted to please us. They wanted to be good kids. They wanted to do all those things that they thought they were supposed to do. And their job right now is to become independent.
Yeah.
And part of what that means is that biologically their brain is separating and saying, I'm going to sift through the stuff that I really want to do and the stuff that somebody's just telling me to do because they've been in charge. And so there's this biology thing that it sounds like, you know, the tendency is to fight. And it's frustrating. It makes perfect sense that it would be irritating. And so the opportunity here is to figure out how to hold her accountable for things and give her space to do what she wants to do.
Right.
And that's the next step. So instead of just do what I tell you to do, it's figure out what you want to do and let me help you hold yourself accountable to that. You know, it's a simple language change. So, like, yeah. I have a 17-year-old. Go ahead.
And also knowing what's required to do. Like, you're required to wash your face and brush your teeth before bed, you know. And
Yeah. So where are the boundaries and where are the non-negotiables? And I think that that's the piece. And so I've got a 17, almost 18-year-old, and the language is, buddy, what time are you going to bed tonight? And what do you need to do to make sure that that happens? And I'm not sure that that's a great idea because you have a test tomorrow. Can you come up with an alternative that might be a little bit earlier that we'd both be comfortable with? You know, so it's that shift in language where you're asking them questions, you're holding them accountable for making decisions, and then you're helping them figure out from a strategic perspective, from a strategy perspective, kind of what to do. And so I'm going to jump in a little bit here on the lesson here, but does that give you –
Yes.
Allowing
and
relaxing without pushing your time frame is where you're taking aim, Lori. Sorry, I got distracted and started doing a little bit of the lesson.
Right. Yeah, no, I think that's good because then it'll be, all right, you're held accountable, and so what happens if you aren't able to meet those things that you have discussed, you know, you say you're going to go bed. So then I guess after so much time, you then say, okay, let's relook at this.
Right. Well, and that's the piece of it. Then you get to figure out what the scaffolding is that they need. It may not be a realistic expectation that they can go to bed at 10:30 on their own. They may need some system or process that might include you and might not include you to make sure that it happens. And that's something that you can work on together to figure out, okay, last night you said you wanted to go to bed at 10:30 and it was really hard for you to make that happen. What do you want to do tonight to try to make sure that you can be more successful? What different do you want to do tonight that's going to, you know, maybe increase your success rate, something like that.
That sounds good.
So let's shift in. Everybody's got something to take aim on? I'm going to just pause for a second. Any questions before we move into the lesson on buy-in and motivation?
No.
Okay, cool. This is one of those topics, and we were talking about it in Sanity School last night, and I think that the role of motivation for me in the ADHD brain, or even in kids, my one with anxiety and one with ADHD, and just kind of understanding that the role that motivation plays and how important it is in really helping our kids to be successful and accomplishing what they want and you know, and to some extent what we want, it's such a key thing. We talk a lot about the just get it done button and the fact that those of us who don't have ADHD, it doesn't make a lot of sense to us that something would be hard if we weren't interested in it. You just push the button, you get it done. And when I finally understood, and it was the ADHD adults in my life who were able to explain to me, it's not a matter of willpower. It's literally a matter of necessity. And that genuine interest, you know, the ADHD brain needs to be genuinely interested in something in order to do it. And motivation is the key to making that happen. So we talk about kind of five different areas and tools that you can use to motivate the ADHD brain. Actually, you can motivate any brain effectively. Novelty, competition, urgency, interest, and play. And a couple of these I want to talk a little bit about because competition, some kids love competition. Let's see how many math problems you can get done in the next 5 minutes. Let's see who can get upstairs and get their shoes and get back downstairs first. You know, all of those sorts of things. If you have a child who has anxiety, competition may be really hard for them. And so it may not be very motivating. It may be stressful, actually. The other one that I want to kind of talk about is urgency, because I think that a lot of times urgency is one of those motivators that pushes us into the more primitive part of our brain. So like we wait to the last minute and it's like, it's an emergency, I've got to get it done because there's a deadline, and we kind of go into fight or flight mode, and that's what pushes us to make sure things get done. It's really more like a fear-based motivator. So it's the same kind of biology that goes on when, if you've ever had somebody who's like afraid of getting yelled at, so they do something because they're like, oh no, I don't want to get yelled at, I've got to get this done. Or when they get yelled at and they react and they do something real quick because they're getting yelled at, and so they want the yelling to stop. It's that same sort of, I'm going to call it fear-based motivator. And the challenge is that for some kids and for some adults too, it works really, really well because it's a different part of the brain and it's a very reactive part of the brain. The challenge is that it produces stress. And so if we're using fear-based or urgency-based motivators to help our kids or to help ourselves, it does produce stress over time. And so it wears us out, and it wears our kids out, and a lot of times it'll lose its effectiveness, right? So we find that yelling at our kids works for a while, and then eventually they stop even hearing that. And they're stressed out, and we're stressed out because yelling is no fun for anybody. And I think the other piece around urgency is that I've got a lot of adults that I work with who've used urgency and kind of beating themselves up as their motivator, and they're pretty exhausted, and it's hard to find other stuff to motivate. Part of what our job is as parents is to help our kids to understand what the role is of motivation for them and for their brains. And I think I've told this story before, but I still remember very distinctly this conversation with my oldest about motivation. He was working on a like 50-problem math sheet, and we divided it in two nights. First night, it took him about 20 minutes to get his problems done. The second night, it took him 2.5 hours. And so it was a great opportunity to go, what in the world happened? It was the same problems, nothing was different, and it took you more than twice as long to get it done the second night. And he said, Mom, my show was on yesterday. I didn't have anything that I needed to get done for. And it was a great opportunity for us to talk about the role that motivation played in helping his brain to click in. And it began the conversation for eventually what becomes, okay, buddy, what do you want to do to motivate your brain? Because it seems like you're a little stuck. Which is where we want our kids to get to, is to understand that their brain needs motivation, figure out what the motivation is that they want to put in place, and then they can make it happen. My son would always, like, for the longest time, he would have ice cream after he finished his homework. That was always his motivation. The second piece of this is about buy-in. And, you know, buy-in is a key component to internally motivating and having our kids get to that point where they want to self-motivated, or they are self-motivated. If you feel like it's your job and you know that it's your job and you have a stake in the game, you're more likely to take action. That's why we always encourage parents to take aim on things that our kids are motivated to do, because there's more natural buy-in to get them to help and to participate. If you're stuck on something, it might be that you're really motivated to have the change happen and they are not. So what comes up for you guys in terms of these concepts of buy-in and motivation?
I think that it's funny. I was looking at the graph with all the executive functions and the challenges, and motivation is what he identified, both task management and attention management. as being challenges for his, for him. I think that there's potential for buy-in from him because he wants to stay in school. And I guess my question is, though, you know, that's such a long, that's not immediate.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's good. That's a good point. And that's actually one of the things I didn't mention, and thank you for that reminder, is that a lot of times what happens with these motivations is that they're motivated, but the motivation is so far away that it doesn't kick the brain in. So they might be motivated to finish high school. They might be motivated to get into a college. They might be motivated to get all A's or get a good report card, whatever that means. But there's so many steps between here and there and so many days between here and there. And our kids operate in two time zones. They're in now and they're in not now. So that motivation needs to be actually attached to now. And a lot of times those further off ones are hard. So what comes up for you as I'm saying that?
I think him just knowing that he needs to figure out what short-term motivators can get him from point A to point B, from where we are now to successfully completing finals. It's interesting to me because I don't think we've never really talked about it. And for a long time, we used a lot of urgency around here and it did cause a lot of anxiety and people just shut down. He's kind of a competitive guy. I don't know. I mean, it seems like a good conversation to have.
Yeah, so how do you start the conversation with him?
Maybe talking about finals coming up and, you know, hey, when you had told me before that you have a hard time getting started, you know, have you given any thought to how you're going to do that? And I can then talk to him about some of these different things, whether it's competing with himself or having a reward later or, you know, just have that discussion. I'm repeating myself over the weeks, but, you know, he's the kid who says, I've got this, I've got this. I'm going to have straight A's. I've got this. So being honest about that, not always lining up where he thinks he is where he actually is.
So what question could you ask him and how could you hold him accountable? So I know you've got this. What are the, you know, what's the question you ask him then to say, how do you know you got it? What are the steps that will tell you you got it?
Well, that's good in and of itself, but I think it's legitimate for me to ask what his study plans are, like how he plans to, you know, approach the next month of school.
Yeah. And so if you're going to ask him what his study plans are, what language would you use to let him know that you know he's got it, and part of that is having a study plan and you want to hold him accountable for that?
Yeah. Well, I think it is important for me to start by reassuring him that I think he's got it and point to, you know, the successful test he just took. And then he is working with somebody there. I could ask him if he's worked out a plan and talk to his counselor up there about it and ask that he share his the process with me.
Okay. How does that feel?
It feels good. If he participates. It feels good.
So I think he participates. So how do you hold him accountable to participate?
I don't know. I mean, I could ask that he update me on a weekly basis. The way we've been doing it now is pretty much, you know, how's it going? It's fine. Do you have anything specific to tell me? And then sometimes he will. He'll still sometimes get angry, like, Mom, I've got this. This is my thing. I've got to take care of it on my own, which, you know, at this age, that should happen. But going back to the last few weeks and the discussions that we've had, I think me pausing instead of jumping in and agreeing that, yeah, he's got this and I know he's going to handle it, but reminding him that I'm writing the checks and I'd like to know.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think that that's, it sounds like what you want to design with him is what you need from him to feel confident because you're paying the check and
right.
What he can count on you for. You know, so there's a tool we use called Designing the Alliance. I don't know if I've talked about it in this group before, but it's kind of, you know, you say, this is what I need from you and this is what you can count on from me. And you have them do the same thing. And this is what I need from you, Mom. This is what you can count on from me. And so you're partnering together to kind of figure out what you each need to feel comfortable. Yeah, you know he's got it, and it's a big risk. And there's part of you that's a little bit afraid. And so having some sort of safety net in place in your mind is going to make you much more comfortable. You don't want that to be a big, giant safety net. You don't want that to be you jumping in every day. And not having a safety net just doesn't feel right for you.
Right. I like that. I like the idea of that negotiation or your designing alliance. I think that's a good way to approach it.
Cool. Other thoughts from others as we're talking here?
Well, I think, I mean, for my daughter, her motivation is right now, you know, time, screen time, whether it's so she knows that she needs to get things done before she has access, or she can, or we have an agreement, she's going to watch a show and then she has to start doing, get her homework done. So it's, I guess that's really the only right now, other than maybe money, which we've never done, but she seems to only be motivated by a few dollars or some time on the machine. But, you know, it's interesting, the buy-in, it would be great if she would have more buy-in on things like her homework, because she wants to do well in school, and she does well in school. She's only in eighth grade, so it'll be interesting next year with high school. But it's kind of, you know, I kind of have stepped back, and she's doing her homework, but I'd asked her, particularly with some of her writing, is that, you know, is that the best she can do, or is that, how does she feel about her work? And it's always, you know, she's not putting in anywhere near the effort that she could, and it's reflective, in especially in her writing. So it's like, I don't know at what age, or if they ever do, that they actually can recognize that, yes, they want to do well in school, but it's going to take work.
Well, and so I think that the question is, again, it's kind of, you know, how do you hold her accountable for it, and what's a realistic expectation, right? And so it sounds like you're aware that at the stage she's at, it's hard for her to add two and two. The natural
yeah.
cause and effect is not quite there yet. And that's a norm, that's a working memory issue. The fact that we remember that, oh, if we do poorly on this test, we won't get what we want. I mean, that doesn't kick in at, you know, until it sounds like a more advanced level of executive function for her. So how aware do you think she is of the role that motivation plays?
I don't think she's aware of it. You know, she does things that she wants to do, which is really no homework. You know, there's very little of her homework that she enjoys. So if you just look at what is her motivation to get her homework done, or motivation to do things that she doesn't like, it's always because what she gets after it's done type of thing.
Okay. So it sounds like where she's at right now developmentally is that an external motivator is necessary, because she hasn't yet, for these particular situations, she doesn't have an internal motivation. So knowing that that's true, how can you work with her to create some external motivation?
Well, right. I mean, so that's all that, that she's really provided now. But, you know, it's concerning because eventually, well, it's just, you know, you want a person or even an adult to say, okay, this is my end goal. And so in order to do this, I need to do this, this, and this. So in order to do it well, I need to do, you know, but and not just I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
Get it out of the way.
It's scary. When you see a 13-year-old or 14-year-old who doesn't have that yet, so let's do the 3 to 5 challenge, Lori. How old is your daughter from an executive function perspective?
10.
10.
Right.
Is that 5 years off or 3 years off?
That's 4 years off because she's almost 14. So I think
okay,
that's...
Okay, so maybe 8 on in the evenings after she's exhausted for the day, right?
Yeah.
So... You know, I think I'm not saying that it's going to take her 5 more years and so she's going to be 32 instead of 27 when she develops this capability. She's not there yet. And what's most important is that she begin to understand the role that motivation plays, whether it's internally focused or externally focused. You know, it's that understanding and the importance of putting something in place. I mean, she's no different than, you know, a kid who learns how to walk late. You know, you don't get worried about them not walking until they reach a certain point. Well, I'm going to challenge you to not get worried about her until she's 20, 25, you know, whatever she is. She's 13.
Right.
She's 10, executive function perspective, and she's not there. And so your opportunity is to get her to the next level. And I think the next level is understanding, beginning to understand the role of motivation.
Right.
And being able to get buy-in to using motivation externally rather than jumping all the way to her being internally motivated, which feels like a few steps up from where she is right now. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So what's going to be hard about that for you? Because I know this isn't easy.
Well, I just, you know, it's going to be hard that, my gosh, she's so focus on the damn iPhone. And I know that's all kids because they see all the kids, regardless of their abilities or whatnot, are stuck in that. But it's, you know, and it's also recognizing that sometimes her motivation is urgency because a project that she should have been working on all week, she's doing the night before and the discomfort associating with that. So we had that discussion in trying to plan things. So it's just more of, you know, being aware of this and seeing how we can time things out. So in the times where just, you know, an extra hour on the iPhone is not going to be enough, but it's more of planning things out and, you know, to reduce the stress associated with some of these things.
So what do you need to be willing to consider is true to not worry so much about whether or not she's internally motivated?
I'm not sure of the question. I mean, I just have to be reminded that she's at the functioning, executive functioning of a 9 or 10-year-old. And if she was 9 or 10, I would say, okay, you know, I wouldn't expect this kind of more maturity of, I recognize I need to do this work and this is, you know, all that. So I think I just have to remind myself that she's not this, you know, almost 14-year-old. She's
right.
So.
Right.
Yeah.
When I've got one kid, so I've got a data point of two, right? So one of them began to become internally motivated when she got to high school. The other one took till about junior year. You know, so it's every kid is on their own trajectory, and it's about kind of figuring out what the next step is and the next step and the next step. And for a lot of us, it's about managing the catastrophizing. I don't know if you've heard us say that word before, but it's kind of like assuming that because they have no motivation at 13, that they're not going to have motivation at 30, and they're going to still be struggling. So how does that feel?
Yeah, that's definitely. Okay.
Well, and you're in good company, believe me. I mean, it's a hard thing to grapple with because it's scary because we don't see, it doesn't make sense to us that they haven't started to develop it yet. So, other thoughts from the group around this idea of buy-in or motivation? Jane, how does this play into the idea of you shifting from directing mode into level 2 or 3 on some of these areas for him?
I guess listening to Jody, I think that there are a lot of things that she said that are probably pretty applicable to what I need to do, such as she said, and Jody, I wrote this down in quotes, he needs to figure out his short-term motivators to get his work done. So my question to him would be, what do you know about yourself and your brain, your motivation to be sure you can do that to get what you need to get done by Friday, the end of third quarter?
Go ahead.
Well, then the other thing that I highlighted in yellow, which is going to be something I want to really do, is this is what I need from you. And writing the checks is really important. I try not to do the money thing because I thought I was creating anxiety with him and about tuition and stuff. But I do write pretty big checks for his tuition. And I feel like if he's just going to, which I use the word to him, just kind of blow off his work, you know, then it makes me really aggravated. So I might say, you know, I'm writing a lot of money for tuition, but I don't know, that'll put him off. He'll say, oh, you know, don't do it or whatever.
But so part of it is figuring out what motivates him and what, you know, what, turn and what shuts him down and what engages him. So what do you think instead of what do you think would get his buy-in for you staying involved?
Well, I was going to say the phrase, this is what I need from you, this is what you can count on from me, is a good thing to talk with him about. And you know, it sounds like you're asking me to come up with some motivators for him, but I think he needs to come up with what his are so that he can, you know, get the work done that he wants to get done.
Well, and so I think that's the piece of it is kind of opening the door to the conversation. When you think about kind of, we've got a scale, and I tend to think of scales. So one is you're completely in charge, and 10 is he's completely in charge. Where are you right now, and what does the next step look like?
So, see, that's the really hard part, because I can help, like, to the point where I'm actually doing the work, and that can happen quite often, I would have to tell you.
Okay, so that's you doing it, right?
Yeah, and the other, I get so frustrated with him after not either appreciating or just giving up, I then just say, okay, you just do it.
You go from 1 to 10, right?
Yes. And there is no 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And I don't know how to do 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
So let's take a specific example, Jane, and look at what 2 or 3 might look like. So give me an example where you've done more than you think is appropriate at his age and development stage.
So Spanish. He's got a 58 if he just does a few more assignments before Friday. And I would actually like to sit down, which I've done, and it does help a lot, and he likes that. But he can dictate what he wants to say, and then I type them up, and then, you know, he emails them in. So I don't know, getting him to sit down and do that. Okay, now he has three sentences and questions in biology to look up and answer. And they've been sitting here for like a long time. Well, today I went to type to research the answers myself so I could answer the questions. And then I was going to say, Joshua, I answered these questions. Now you look at them and look at your notes from biology and tell me if they are similar, they match up, and put it in your own words. Turn it in.
Okay, so hang on. So is that a one, a two? Where do you think you are on that one?
Eight.
In terms of you directing?
Because I would actually sit down at the computer. It froze up this morning. The only reason why they're not done, because I would.
So you were actually doing his homework
computer.
For him. Yeah. So that's one. Right. Okay. So what do you want to hold him accountable for?
I can hardly narrow it down. Because I can't get him to the point where I would like to say, sit down here, look this up. That's me directing again.
Okay. So let's go through the steps. So the first thing is that he needs to know what he needs to do. He needs to get started on what he needs to do. He needs to follow through on what he needs to do. And he needs to complete it and turn it in. So I'm oversimplifying, but those feel like five steps, right? Of those, which ones are the easiest for him and which ones are the hardest for him?
Getting started, the second one.
Is the hardest one?
Most hard.
Okay. And which one is the easiest one?
Capturing the homework. I mean, he's good at doing that.
So what question could you ask instead of telling to confirm that he knows what he needs to do tonight?
Do you know what you need to do tonight? I mean, he does know what he needs. I mean,
So I'm going to challenge you to ask open-ended question rather than closed-ended question. So instead of do you know, it would be what do you need to do tonight? Then you're hearing and getting feedback that he actually does get it. Because if you say, do you know, and he says yes, you're like, well, does he really? And you have to ask another question to get the answer.
He doesn't know the priority of, like, this class, I've got to do this particular thing, or that class, I've got to do this particular thing.
So he knows what the whole list of them are. And so is there a question in there that you could ask?
My question... In the beginning of the call, you said you would come back, and I had to think of a question, and I thought of to say to him, I know it's frustrating to talk about schoolwork, so what time this afternoon, I put this afternoon because I don't want to put it off until 9 o'clock tonight, what time this afternoon can we discuss your classes and what you would like me to help you with, and then you can choose the priorities. So I was going to go online and pick out the ones that are the priorities, because I know how to do that. Maybe I should have him sit down and pick out which ones are the priorities.
Well, so part of what you're figuring out is what he can and can't do on his own, right? So there's several steps here. It's kind of figuring out what needs to be done, figuring out what the priority is. And so, you know, maybe what would it be like to kind of walk him through all the steps with questions instead of directions?
I'll try that.
What's going to be hard about that for you?
Getting him to even sit down and do it. He'll say, Mom, I want to go hiking. And I have gotten to the point where I say, go ahead. I'm thinking he's in school all day long. It's way too many classes for him. It's just so overwhelming. Go hiking. Go take, 2 hours in the
So you go and you let him hike, but what's the boundary you want to put in place? Because you know that there's homework to do.
That's the hard part. He kind of does what he wants to do. And he said, well, then I need to recuperate and take my relaxation bath. Well, by the time he does that and has dinner, well, you know, he's twittering away his time. It's just the motive. It's just to get it done. He can't, like, walk over there.
So what do you want to hold him accountable for?
Starting at, like, a certain time, I'll say, well, do you want to, how about 7 o'clock? No, I'll say, what time do you want to do it? Oh, I'll say 9, 8.
Is that okay with you?
No, because then sometimes okay. He's too tired to do it. No right. Ability
so
at that
how
point.
Do you, so what's the, so then there's a conversation there. So I think that that's the piece of it is kind of looking at where are you giving in because you're not comfortable pushing and holding them accountable, and how do you hold them accountable? You know, so there's, if you feel strongly that 8 or 9 is too late, how do you have that conversation with him?
Well, I've said, you know, if you wait till that long, you will be so tired, like what happened the other night, and you just can't focus. You can't, you know, feel
okay.
Like you want to do it.
So what you're doing is you're mirroring for him what you believe is true. What I'm asking you is, what do you want to hold him accountable for?
I'd like to hold him accountable for getting the important work done by a certain time.
And it sounds like starting his work by a certain time.
Yes.
Okay. Because I think that that's one of the challenges. If you hold him accountable for the end point, but you know that the beginning point that he's going to start is not going to be realistic to get it going, you actually have to hold him accountable for the start point and not the end point. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So is it something like, buddy, it's great if you want to go hiking and do some relaxation time. My expectation is that you're sitting at your desk at 7 o'clock starting on homework.
Oh, he doesn't do well with me being too direct. He kind of rebels at that point. It's like he wants to
okay.
feel in control that, you know. So if I came okay. across, which I have always done in the past, I've been very hard as all this, and it either got into screaming, yelling, crying, anxiety, horrible messes. So I kind of backed
okay.
off of all that.
So did you back off or did you throw in the towel? Just, I'm going to say that a little curtly, but do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I mean, pretty much. Well, I can't say I backed off because I'm still constantly, you know, saying what needs to be done and all that and directing a whole lot. Sometimes he cooperates and other times he's got other agenda. But
it's
too difficult to manage his unwillingness to cooperate.
Yeah, it's hard because if you're afraid that he's not going to cooperate, you're going to be more likely to do it for him than you are to try to hold him accountable for it because you don't want to have the conflict. And that makes perfect sense. So I'm going to move us because I'm watching our time here, and Jane, I'm going to come back to you in a minute and kind of, I know that there's a lot of unknown in this for you right now, but I'm going to kind of say let's sit with it for a minute and see if you can pull out of it something specifically that you want to do in terms of action
okay.
based on an aha, if that's okay.
Okay. All right.
Cool. So 4 questions. We're on page 47. What did I focus on or pay most attention to today? What's my clarity or takeaway? What's an aha that I had? What's a realistic action step for me to take? And how do I set myself up for success with this action?
Well, this is Lori. I can go. I think that mine was just recognizing that at this stage, 13-year-old, external motivators are the way that really all that she has right now. And I need to just remind myself that she's more like a 9 or 10-year-old, and so to be realistic and to not catastrophize things down the road, but just dealing with now. And But one of the things I do want to do is actually discuss with her some of these motivators that are on this list and see what she comes up with are things that get her to take action on things that she just doesn't want to get done. So it should be an interesting conversation.
Yep. Awesome. Awesome.
I'll go. I think the thing that kind of popped in my head is, you know, using questions to get the conversation going, and of course listening. But I, as I'm sure is clear now, have a tendency to would control. You know, this is what you need to do. This is what you're going to do. It wouldn't happen, and then you know there'd be fallout. As opposed to asking my son, you know, what do you think about this? You've identified these challenges. What do you think motivates you? So I'm hoping to use that. And what I like that designing alliance piece. And so my plan is to, in terms of upcoming finals, tell them, you know, I need this because I'm paying and I'm vested in you succeeding in school, and you can count on me to be there and be in touch with your counselor, and then turn it to him and ask him what he can do or what he will do.
Cool. So on a scale of 0 to 10, how hard is that going to be for you to put that in place?
10 being the easiest. 10.
Okay.
I plan to do this in the next day or two.
Awesome. Great. Jane, what about you?
Moving, the focus on is how I'm going to be moving to less directed instructions to having him take more ownership. And the takeaway is to ask open-ended questions. That's as far as I got.
Okay, cool. Is there a particular question that kind of pops out for you that you want to start with? You were talking about tonight after school.
To ask him what time we could discuss what the... Well, that's not so... All he'll say is a certain time, and that's not such a great thing. No, I don't have a good question.
So I'm curious, you're backing up because it sounded like you were feeling pretty good about that question, and it would hold him accountable for actually having the conversation and give him some choices. Where'd you go?
Well, I like the idea of him having choices, which I give him a lot of, but just saying, well, what time? All I'll get is a certain time, and then that's the end. But I guess then the guy focused on, well, the next thing is about asking him about what can help him to motivate himself. And then us sitting down together and looking at what the areas are that need to get done.
Yeah, yeah. When you were talking about the steps in between, right? So the steps in between you directing and him directing, the first step might be you doing it in front of him. You know, so
okay.
Here's all that, you know, if instead of the next step might be you doing it with him. The next step might be him doing it in front of you. The next step might be him doing it and then bringing it back to you. You know, so it's kind of at each of these stages, instead of you doing, it's, you know, instead of saying, well, fine, you do it, because what happens is you throw it over the fence and then you feel like you don't have a way to hold him accountable. You know, so it becomes kind of, I'm happy to let you do it, and we need to have a way to check back. What will that look like? You know, so it's that, those kinds of questions and that kind of discussion is what I think can create some of that in-between stuff for you. How does that feel?
Yeah, I can model what I do to get organized, and so he can sit and watch, and then he can try to do it from me.
Yep. No, that makes sense. That makes sense. All right. Thank you very much, ladies, great call today.
We are actually, I want to just remind everybody, we're going to have, we're on spring break the first week in April. So we're going to have 2 weeks, the next 2 weeks we're off, and then we're meeting again the week of the 10th. And there's a lifeline call, a life office hours call on the 28th next week. So thank you very much,
everybody.
Thank you. Okay, thank you.
Bye. Bye-bye.